pursue above that. And this is really the foundation for where we'll start tonight and really where we'll end as well. 1 Timothy chapter 4, beginning in verse 12. And you're very familiar with these verses, but it says this: let no one look down on your youthfulness. Well, why? I mean, again, Timothy wasn't necessarily a teenager, but he was young in comparison with those around him, young in the church. And I think a lot of times it's easy for you as young people to go, well, yeah, I mean, people are always looking down on me and they don't respect me and, you know, I don't get the respect I deserve, or, you know, whatever it might be. My parents don't understand me. They don't, whatever. Well, if you want respect, if you don't want people to look down on you, what do you need to become? Mature. So it says this: let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity, do what? You know what it is? Show yourself an example, not of the world, but of those who believe. Because we don't need more examples of the world. We don't need more examples of people in the world and the way that they act. There's plenty of those. I mean, so watch them on TV, you know, listen to them in your music, walk around in the mall. You guys, there's lots of examples of people that don't love Christ, but you are to show yourself an example of those who believe. Imagine at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, that you might be actually demonstrating yourself an example of what it means to believe in Jesus as reflected in your speech, your conduct, your love, your faith, and your purity. And of course, you know, the way you conduct your relationships is going to be one of the primary ways that you demonstrate that example. Instead of your relationships being a mess and a disaster and just, you know, all over the place from the very beginning, what a privilege it would be is if your relationships were an example, a model of what those who believe in Jesus look like, act like, speak like. Because I believe with all of my heart that very many of you in this room will take hold of these truths we've been talking about, and your relationships will be that. That's the joyous privilege of what you have. You're being taught by your parents, taught by the church. You have the opportunity to put these things into practice. Goes on to give a series of things until I come, give attention to the public reading of Scripture, or preaching and to teaching. Don't neglect the spiritual gift within you, which was bestowed upon you through the prophetic utterance with the laying on of hands by the presbytery, by the elders. Then it says, take pains with these things, be absorbed in them, so that your progress may be evident to all. And again, he's talking about Timothy's overall progress in the church that other people can see. Now, that's the neat thing about being a young person in this church, is that as you progress forward, people should be able to see your progress. And I love that, because what it means is that Timothy wasn't perfect. It says, look, people should see your growth, that you are being absorbed with these truths, and that you are moving from less maturity to more maturity. That when you were making mistakes before, now you're putting into practice the things of the Word. Guys, the issue isn't that you're not going to make mistakes in relationships. You will. The issue is, will you grow? See, maturity means you overcome your mistakes, that you continue to press forward. You make new mistakes, as it were. Not that you were perfect to start with, or that you never made any, that you hide them because, you know, I don't want anybody to see my mistakes. Well, you guys, you should repent of them if they were sin, but people should see your progress. And imagine, you know, starting off, you came into the youth group at you know, in sixth grade, seventh grade, you were 12 years old, and for someone to be able to watch your progress all the way through and then watch you enter into a relationship and see your growth in progress as an example of one who believes, because that's a precious privilege. People are watching you, those around you are watching, and the adults are watching you as well. And imagine that you would set an example for the older people in this church in the purity and the love and the joy and the proper kinds of intimacy in which you would conduct your relationships. What an amazing thing that would be. It goes on to say, pay close attention to yourself. And really, I want you to think about this tonight. Pay close attention to yourself and to your teaching. He was supposed to be proclaiming the truth, but first and foremost, he had to pay attention to his own life, to yourself. It doesn't mean be absorbed in your own things. It means know what your life is like. Be constantly evaluating. And that's one thing I think that American teenagers, maybe any teenager, totally checks out on, is evaluating their own life. Right? Thinking about, where am I at before the Lord? What are my characteristics like? How am I growing? What's going on? Instead of just kind of blah, you walk through life and you wonder, how did I get here? Well, because most people do that. He says, pay close attention to yourself, not with this morbid introspection, always just looking in the mirror going, woe is me, but instead comparing your life to the principles of Scripture, and in our context tonight, comparing your relationships to the principles of Scripture. Remember, it all starts with your friendships and your relationships to your parents and to your siblings, so you should be analyzing those, and then it moves its way towards relationships that could move towards marriage. So you could, all of you here, regardless of how old you are, can be evaluating your relationships, paying close attention to your life. Are you growing in Christ-likeness? Are you looking more like Jesus? And it says, pay close attention to your life and to your teaching. But listen to this. Persevere in these things. That would be in the things that are good. For as you do this, you will ensure salvation for both yourself and your hearers. What does that mean? That if he's living a proper life, that it's a reflection of the truth of God that has transformed him and is evidence of his salvation. That it's a real, true, changed relationship with Jesus Christ. And that if he's preaching and teaching the right things, and in your case, for most of you, speaking the right things to your friends and to one another, that will help other people come to know Christ. Carson was talking about having a chance to talk with someone on the way home about the truths of the gospel. And prayerfully, as he was doing that, he was helping to ensure salvation, perhaps, that is to bring about the knowledge of the truth so that that young man would come to Christ because he had the proper words to say. So yes, in your lives, in your relationships, you are to speak the things which ensure salvation, that is, demonstrate the reality of true salvation and help other people come to know Christ as well. And your relationships will be a primary means by which you accomplish that. Now, I had the privilege this week to kind of just match on to that idea of, we had a college student, a guy that goes to UT. We had him over for lunch, and I'd met him a couple weeks ago in church and got to hear his story a little bit. And without going into much detail, there was two things that stood out to me. One, he came to Christ early. He grew up in a Christian home, solid church. In fact, his church wasn't called, their youth ministry was called the Youth Institute, which might already begin to tell you what that's going to be like. He's a master's guy, Mark Vaughn is his name, that runs the thing there. So it was the Youth Institute, which is what they did for youth group was biblical counseling, systematic theology, Old Testament survey, New Testament. I mean, that was youth group. And Tristan's like, man, youth group's boring. Imagine going to that one. That's all you got. Well, why? Because they were saying the very thing that the verses he read. They were giving the things that you need, what, to become mature. And he was learning all those things, probably came to Christ at about age 15, but he was also dabbling in the world. He began to dabble in the world about age 16 or 17. He's a believer, he's hearing all these things, and he knows the truth, and he's got all the solid, firm foundation. But over here, he's like, you know, this is really great, I really like this. Goes off to UT, living on campus. And the people at UT said, you should walk with Jesus. Right. No, they did not. You're like, what UT are you talking about? No, so he got there. He didn't go crazy, in one sense. I think his Christian upbringing kind of held him back. But the issue was, he was like, I can do this on my own. I don't need any accountability. I don't need anybody around. I'll just kind of work my way through this. And since I'm kind of working it out, I'm not even sure how true all this stuff is, even though, and so for a year, he just drifted. He's kind of wandering through. And he had a friend call him on the phone a couple of weeks ago, I think, and a friend from youth group. Who's walking with the Lord now this year later into college. He said, hey, can I stop by? Can we go do dinner? And so he sat down with his friend for dinner, and his friend was like, dude, what are you doing? Where is your life? Are you going to church? Are you plugged into a body of Christ? Are you actively pursuing the Lord through the truth of the Word of God? That's the kind of friend you guys need. That's the kind of friend I need. He'll hunt you down on the college campus, driving through town for whatever, say, hey, let's go out and win. He'll say, hey, dude, how's he has a swimmer. He swims on the swim team, studly swimmer, and swims like the 200 butterfly. I couldn't even survive a 200 butterfly. Anyway, if you're not a swimmer, you don't understand. But he hunts him down and says, you know, you got all this other stuff going on, but are you plugged into a local body? Are you serving the Lord? And this young man said, that second. Well, it wasn't a verbal voice. It was just, you've got to get this right. That night, he calls his pastor, calls his parents, where can I go to church? They say, hey, there's a master's guy in close to town. He shows up that week. A bunch of people at the church said, hey, what's up? How's it going? He said he met four people before he even walked in the door. I was like, are you going to our church? All these people that are friendly to him, invite him to college Bible study, shows up at college Bible study, was brave enough to show up at my house and go to lunch with the pastor. I say that to two things. One, you can have all the blessings and benefits of a strong youth program. You can learn all the stuff, and we want you to. And I make no excuses for that. None. Because you need to know it all, every bit of it. But that in and of itself is not going to change you. That information is not going to change you. A true relationship with Jesus does. And this young man had a true relationship with Jesus, but what happened? He allowed the world to distract him and to cloud his mind. so that he thought, well, maybe I can dabble here and I can have this here. He thought he could have both. And so the teaching that he had learned, the world always eats up grace, is how Francis Schaeffer put it. You're always going to move in that direction if you allow that to continue. And so he did. But so one, you need to be aware that just knowing all these things and growing up in a solid youth group and having solid families, that's first part of it. But are you dabbling with the world even already? As you move into 12th grade, 11th grade, starting to play with those things, I tell you, those will draw you and all the good information and the truth you know, even if you're a believer at times, if you're not careful, staying accountable in the local body, staying tight with Christian friends who will challenge you and your parents who will move you. Guys, easy to walk. And then the second thought was that there was a friend who found him. Part of the relationships that he built in high school, the Lord used what? His church relationships, his parents praying for him, his pastor praying for him. His pastor was a small group leader. Right, all those things, praying for him, and then that faithful friend to come and be used as a means. Guys, maybe this will be true for you. And the reason I talk about it in relationships is you can learn all this truth about relationships and walk out tomorrow and start a disastrous relationship because it tugs our heart. That's what I said, the danger of that infatuation that I call it puppy love, that might sound demeaning to you because you might think, well, I'm 18, I don't have puppy love. This is strong feelings, but it's not real love. It is an emotional feeling. It is emotional attachment that will draw you in a second. It's so powerful. And what you know, if you haven't carefully thought it through and aren't carefully directing it with the proper kinds of accountability, you're going to get sucked off down that road. And I don't want that for you. So as we kind of work on how to pursue these things in a godly way, understand that the first part of the pursuit we'll talk about tonight is primary. The second part of the pursuit comes after that. So what are you first pursuing? If we're going to talk about how you actually pursue one of these relationships, how do you get towards marriage? As I've been saying, pull back, pull back, pull back. Now we'll talk about what it means to pursue. And I'm not saying if you're in seventh grade, start pursuing, or even eighth or ninth. Only this is the pattern that we can hold out, I think, that has scriptural principles in it. First, pursue character and maturity. First, pursue character and maturity. You have to pursue those regardless of whether or not you get married. But if you're going to get married, and most of you are going to, what you're going to need more than anything else is character, biblical character. That is the characteristics of God lived out through you, and maturity, the ability to make wise decisions in the light of the difficult things that the world, that you will face in the world, overcoming mistakes, overcoming sin. You need character and maturity. Because I'm convinced, again, that most of you, many of you, that's what you want. You go, I want to grow. That's why I'm here. That's why I listen. That's why I come and listen to these things. Guys, good start. But are you building it down into your life, pursuing that before you pursue all your relationships? That's why I'm saying, wait, hold yourself back. Don't let that infatuation at 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, even 11th grade at times, just suck you away into a relationship and you stop your maturity process. Now, you don't have to when you get into a relationship. I get that. But oftentimes, that's what happens. You're just looking for a relationship. That's all you want. The world says you got to get one. You do that and your spiritual maturity plateaus right there. Because all of a sudden, all your time and attention and energy is spent on that person, and you're not growing at all. So yes, first and foremost, character and maturity. That's what you're building. That's what you're learning. You're putting that into your friendship. So how do you do that? Pursue intimacy with your family. Pursue intimacy with your family. That is deep, strong relationships where you are learning to love your siblings. We've talked about this. This is all review. Where you're learning to, guys, have a real relationship with your parents. I keep urging this on you, and I pray that some of you are taking me up on it. Where you go and sit down with your mom and dad and you say, hey, let's talk about something real. They're not trying to always draw you. Hey, let's talk about this deep thing. And you're like, come on. Instead, you're sitting down and saying, let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about what it means to doubt. Let's talk about what it means to walk with God. What do you do at work where you are bridging the gap in pushing back in righteousness and intimacy in relationship with them, not talking back to them, instead drawing them out? Guys, do you do that? Your parents, sit them down. I know they're busy. Maybe they don't foster that. You do that. Hey, mom, can we go out to coffee? And you sit down with your mom, instead of just your buds or whatever, and you sit over coffee, and first you tell your mom how much you appreciate her, and then you ask about her life, and you ask her the things that are hard. Yeah, whether you are a son or a daughter. And you take your dad out and say, Dad, I know you're busy. I don't even know about your work. Could you tell me about it? What do you do there? And how do you walk with God there? Guys, intimacy with your family and your siblings. You start to press in to love them well. All right, so intimacy with family. again, so easy to think, and that's another thing that happens. You're in seventh, eighth grade, you're just beginning to where you could actually start to deepen with your family some, and boom, you've got this other relationship, you're out the door, you're on the phone all the time, never paying any attention to your family, your siblings become kind of, you know, just pawns to move around to get you what you want, your parents become a means by which you can get the car and get the stuff you want to do, all because you've got this other relationship. Slow down. Take some time. Build some maturity and some intimacy with your family, and that may mean and probably will mean that you don't dive into one of these relationships until the end of high school. I am encouraging that you're waiting and waiting. Again, the Bible doesn't say how long you have to wait. You work it out with your parents, all that stuff, but I am encouraging it. Go slow. Wait until you're reaching the end of high school because you need this time to develop these things. Pursue seeking God with others. Pursue seeking God with others, not just yourself, but find others who long to walk with God. And I see you guys doing this. I want you to do it. Where you're asking, you know, someone's, hey, let's do a partner study. Let's sit down and go through the gospel primer together. Let's, you know, just even talk or text on the phone. Not just, you know, a lot of the frivolous stuff we talk about, but let's talk about what the Lord's doing in our lives, even if we can't get together because you're all so busy. I know that. But you still could connect. Guys, pursue Jesus with others. This is a huge issue when it comes to learning how to walk with God. Pursue financial responsibility. What? Where'd that come from? You think you can have a good relationship and a good marriage relationship if you blow money? And if you can't handle your finances? And if you're like, I don't have any finances to handle. Even the little bit that you get? Did you blow it on stuff and you can't save and you don't give to the church and all these things? And some of you are getting the point, we've got jobs. So you've got one thing on your mind, car. Right, well, maybe that needs to, yes, not us. School, I don't know what you got on your mind. Buy presents for my parents, maybe that's on your mind. I don't know. But you learn how to use that money wisely, not just for yourself, because you're going to have to learn how to do that. Talk about financial responsibility, not so you could make lots of money. I'm so financially, you know, I've got it together. I've done the courses and all. No. It's just so you can use your money to the glory of God. So when you have someone that is dependent upon you, or when you are working with someone in running a family or a household, that you are able to use that money for God's glory. Pursue parenting skills. You're like, what? Yeah, serve in your family. Observe. Help out with children's ministry. Learn how to work with little kids. Some of you, they're built in. Maybe you've been working with little kids since, you know, your siblings were little. That's great. I remember I used to change diapers for my three younger sisters, and we had the cloth diapers. Where you stick them with a pin? Yeah, I mean, you knew when you got it wrong. Bah! You know, they're screaming. And you stick your hand, and then you take those and you throw them in the toilet, and you got to clean them. Ooh, it's, anyway. You're like, when did you grow up? Well, I mean, that's how you clean the things out, right? So I had to learn some parenting skills there. You also learn from your mom and dad how to, you know, get with your dad, learn how to fix something, anything. All right, get with your mom. Learn how to, you know, some of your moms help you with these things and dads help you with things. Sometimes you got to be a little more proactive. And they say, hey, come help me with this. And you're like, I got stuff to do. I got to text my girlfriend. Maybe just set that down and say, Dad, I'll go with you and do that. Let me learn how to be responsible like you are in these things. And so you're learning some skills, whatever it might be. Pursue skills that you're going to need as a parent. And by the way, the skills that you're learning now, I mean, maybe I'm sure your parents have probably told you this, but let me just help your parents out by telling you this. Those music skills you're learning and even the information stuff you're learning, because you're never going to have opportunities to learn like this again. The skills you learn by about 17 or 18, that's it. Unless you like major in that thing, like you become a major in music or something, I mean, that's where your skills end. How good you are by the time you hit about the end of high school is about how good you're going to be. And that'd be great if like that piano that you learned and that violin that you're learning and that music stuff, that you were good enough at it that you could teach your kids, or you could use it for some other, you could use it in the church. That's why we have a music program where we want to give you the opportunity to learn these skills. But by the time you hit college, man, you might enhance that skill a little, but it's probably not going to be too much. So learn some skills, learn to help out, learn practical life skills, pursue those things. Like, man, that sounds boring. I just want to play video games. Sorry, that's not practical life skills. And some of you go, yes, I can make money. Yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, going pro in football, all right? That's about how much chance you have of making money on Fortnite, and Fortnite probably doesn't even exist anymore, right? It was passe. Nobody even plays that. But there used to have tournaments like 2 weeks ago when it was in, and people were making money, like these big, huge, and these big stadiums. That's not you. Sorry. Because you would have had to give your life to that, and your parents wouldn't have let you do that anyway. Guys, learn some practical life skills. It's like, man, you sound like the home ec teacher. He goes, you need to learn these things. You need to learn how to live in such a way that you can be productive in your relationships. And you don't spend most of your time just trying to figure out, how do I cook something for dinner? All right? Some of you are like, oh, all right, I hate to cook. Well, you need to learn how. Or you need to learn these other, men should learn how to cook too. I need to learn how to cook. But pursue practical life skills. Pursue, this is really important, a biblical view of marriage. Some of you have a totally unbiblical view of what marriage actually is. Think, well, it just satisfies my physical needs, or it just, you know, lovey-dovey all the time. We just get together because we, you know, I just need someone to support me and love me all the time. Well, hopefully they'll support you and love you some of the time, but it's not going to be all the time. And you're going to have to give some back when it comes to that. Marriage is not all about you getting what you want. Did you know that? I'll find this beautiful young thing or, you know, and whoever, and we're just going to love each other and look into each other's eyes, and this is going to be so wonderful because it's all about me. No. Marriage isn't that way. Marriage is wonderful. It's special. Marriage is God's mandate. That might be, I think you have that on your outline. Pursue a biblical view of marriage. That would be number six. So it's intimacy with family, seeking God with others, financial responsibility, parenting skills, practical life skills. Pursue a biblical view of marriage. Marriage is God's mandate. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do if you're going to have a relationship with a member of the opposite gender. That goes beyond friendship. It has to be marriage. But it also pictures Christ in the church. That's why I love doing church weddings and all of you coming and hearing the reality of what marriage actually is as it pictures the relationship with Christ and the church. I was talking to a couple people the other day after the most recent marriage, and they're like beginning to see how that picture works, that an intimacy in the physical realm of a man and a wife is a picture of the kind of intimacy that Christ has with us. It's starting to click a little bit. That's what it's supposed to do. You're a Christian. Marriage is to demonstrate the realities of that. But marriage is also God's refining fire. Marriage is the means by which God brings you to greater maturity. And I got married, and I found out in about 30 seconds how incredibly selfish I was. I thought I was a pretty spiritual guy. I was a leader in the, you know, I was an intern at the church, and I was leading in junior and senior high ministry, and I was teaching the Bible, and I was a summer intern running all the children's ministries one summer. I thought, and prayerfully wasn't, I mean, I love the Lord. I wanted to do those things for the right reasons, but I had a lot of arrogance. I am God's gift to the church. Again, I don't think I probably thought about it quite that way. And I thought, well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be God's gift to my wife. And she didn't really agree with me early on. Maybe not even now. But I was selfish to the core. Things that I wanted to do, things that I'd built in, and why aren't you doing what I want to do? You know, it was nice for you to talk about the things that I like to do. Now let's do the things I like to do. It was too much about me, even when it came to ministry. Because do you understand that you enter into marriage and because God will use it to make you look like Jesus by refining your character as you rub up against another sinner and realize what a wicked sinner you are? If you're not ready for that, you're not ready for marriage. You need to understand that it's all about that, not just hanging out and you know, having kids and because it's God's refining fire in your life. Marriage was never intended as a comfort station for lazy people. It's not what it's about. You getting your comfort, someone else providing your needs, you guys just hanging out and doing your thing. It's going to be really difficult. The best of marriages is a lot of work, and you have to constantly pursue it. If you are lazy now, your marriage will be bad, period. Because you will be lazy in marriage. And though all of that laziness will be exacerbated by the closeness of that person to you, and your refusing or inability because of your laziness to care for them will simply come out every single day. You'll roll over every morning and see your laziness staring you in the face. Because you need to learn biblical diligence and the pursuit of things so that you can honor your wife or your husband, and then you can honor your kids. Oh my goodness. I mean, you know, you're a kid, and you're always wondering, well, what are my parents doing, and why aren't they doing more of this for me? And great parent, mom and dad, thanks, that's really great. Can you do more for me? You have an idea how difficult it is to try to run a family and do all the things and then deal with you and your siblings? Well, I'm sure they love to do it. You wonder why your mom sits there and looks like, you know, a building just got dropped on her head at the end of the day? It's because of you. I mean, she's giving out all this input and all these things going on, and you're like, what? I'm feeling pretty good. Let's, you know. And she's like, I can't even think another straight sentence because I've been trying to talk to you. So you guys, you got to understand, it's tremendous. Little kids, are like these things that they couldn't exist for like 5 minutes on their own. So who provides for them? You. First round is usually mom, and then dad comes home, and then dad and mom, and then maybe mom gets a little sleep, and then dad some, but more mom. I mean, you've probably seen it. Our young couples that just had kids in the church, you can spot them walking around like this. Oh, man. How's the baby sleeping? Sleeping like a baby. Yeah, screams and gets up every 5 minutes. Guys, that's just, it's hard work. You think you can, kind of stumble your way through school and be lazy in the things that you do, and you're actually going to be preparing yourself well for the rigors of loving someone every single day, of getting up in the morning and caring for them all day long and thinking about them, not you, all day long, even as you try to do your work and try to do your stuff, and then coming home and giving your life for them all night long, and then adding kids into that and giving your life for them for 20 years? Are you getting my point? I think you are. You need to prepare, and all these things that you're doing now. So do you think you really need to be jumping into a relationship at 15 years old? I don't think so. Again, work it out with your parents. Let them figure out how and when you want to get this done and when you want to start this pursuit process. But I think you got some time to start working out some of this stuff. And I think if you aren't learning great areas of diligence, if you haven't gotten some diligence and some maturity in certain areas, that you ought to be staying away from relationship. I get that at some point there are things that you learn in relationship that you don't learn other ways. I get that, and I think that's important. But there's some basics you need to have down, so why don't you get those down? And about the time when you're looking pretty diligent and when your parents don't have to micromanage your school and other things, and they don't have to constantly look over you and say, are you getting that done? Are you getting that done? You're just doing it. You can do a job. You can hold that down. Say, now might be time to start thinking about a relationship. Maybe. So guys, that preparation process is really important. Oh, pursue observation. That is, learn how to watch people and to see if they're those that you would want to enter into a marriage relationship with. This doesn't mean judging people and saying, oh, you're nothing and you're worthless and you would never make a good marriage. It just simply is looking at people to say, beginning to evaluate their character in ways that help you know if that's the kind of person that you would want to develop a relationship with. And that means it has to move past what they look like. You're good at evaluating what people look like. You don't need any help with that. It's already in your mind. The moment someone walks in the door, you've got them pegged. You're on this level of the beauty spectrum or on the handsomeness spectrum. You're on this level. You talk to them for a little bit. You see what they wear. It's an instant in your mind. You've got them categorized. Okay, you're here in the socioeconomic spectrum. You're here in the coolness spectrum. Instantaneous. I don't have to teach you a bit of that. What you have to do is overcome that. You have to learn how to not treat people on the basis of how you've instantly pegged them on what they're wearing, how they talk. The first word out of the mouth, boom, you've got you've got them pegged. No, you need to move way past that into learning how to observe people in their character. Do they pay attention to people other than themselves? Are they always just trying to figure out how to get people around them? When their siblings are around, do they pay any attention to them? When their parents are around, do they show respect for them? When there's other people around in the church, do they talk with them? All kinds of things you can begin to learn as you're observing. Not to judge people in self-righteousness, but to begin to look past what people look like and what they talk like and the stuff they're wearing and begin to see what their character is like. Oh, you will do yourself a lot of good to do that. Because then you will start building relationships. You'll start being drawn. Your love, even that kind of initial emotional bump will start being more drawn by character and not so much dominated by looks, which is what our world is. Dominated by looks. There's not much you can do about that. And boom, the looks are there and you're like, wow. But you're going to have to learn how to sort through that. Like I said, not the infatuation, quick to the puppy love, quick to the, starting to try to mess with a relationship when you shouldn't, but starting to think through character. And that's going to take some time. It's going to take you a couple years to learn how to do that well. So jumping into a relationship at 14 or 15 when you have no idea how to do that is probably not a very wise thing to do, because you really can't even begin to evaluate the character well, and the character's not well formed. Someone at 14 or 15, guys, the character is just not formed well, generally. So you need to wait a little bit. Let that thing form, and yours as well. Don't draw someone to you in your own immaturity. We've talked about that. So how a person relates to God, how a person relates to others, what kind of personal discipline do they have? What's their attitude like? Oh, that's so important. You really want to be married to someone who has a bad attitude every day? Oh, that's a bummer. I mean, who doesn't think it's always complaining? doesn't think much about life, you know, is just, you, I mean, really want to be married to that person? I mean, you might be able to help them and encourage them before you get married. I get that. But man, those things don't change easy. And if someone's 16 or 17 and this whole attitude about the world is either all about me or all about how bad things are or always about cutting other people down, you think that's really not going to turn on you in a couple of years? I mean, that's who they are. So they're not going to be able to do anything other than that. So you're going to have to learn how to watch these attitudes. It's so important. Are they humble? Are they contented? Are they hopeful? Are they hopeful about what Christ has done? Man, that's the kind of person you want to cultivate. You want to be that. And then pursue biblical friendship, as we've said. Pursue biblical friendship. Learn how to do this man to man and woman to woman. I've said this before. I'll say it again. Earn your right to enter into a relationship that would look like marriage by being a good friend, man to man and woman to woman. And ask your parents. How good a friend am I? Ask your friends. Am I a good friend to you? Do I pay attention to you? Am I selfish? Is it just all about me? What do you think? And then listen and don't get defensive and, you know, fire them off your Facebook because they were mean to you. Pursue biblical friendship. And guys, work hard. I know you hate to hear me say this, but I'm going to say it. Work hard at being just friends. Work really, really hard at that with members of the opposite sex. Right now, generally, work really hard at just being friends. I can maybe summarize everything that I've told you so far about not being overcome with infatuation, not being overcome with lust, not being self-pitying because you don't have a relationship. Work really hard at just being friends, moving forward together, facing forward before that relationship, like I said last week, starts to turn inward towards one another. Work hard to keep it here so that you're ready when you start to turn it here and you can learn how to walk into intimacy. Intimacy is the reward of commitment. See, not a lot of commitment that you can make in high school. If you're going to get closer and closer, more and more intimate with someone, you need to be able to offer them some kind of commitment. I'm committed to you in some way. That's why you should become intimate with me. And I got to tell you that's what I'll be looking for, and that's what with my son and with my daughters. Someone's going to come alongside and say, I want to grow in intimacy. Well, what kind of commitment are you offering? Kind of stability. You just want them to be intimate with you, and you're going to walk off. We're just going to be us. For how long? Till the next person comes along. Again, you got to be really careful. I'm going to talk about how to do this a little bit, but you guys, there needs to be increasing commitment, and that's really hard to do if you're not pursuing marriage. There's only certain levels of commitment that you can possibly offer, and it's all temporary because it's not a marriage commitment. And so you got to be really careful with that. You can't, it's you and me, babe. Yeah, for how long? Till I don't like you anymore? I mean, where's the commitment? You put the ring on. That's a little different. It's you and me, babe, forever. Okay, that's a good place to develop a lot of intimacy. Again, we got to do some more with that. I get it. All right, so let's go to there. All right, but just remember that I said this. Before two people are ready for the responsibility of commitment, they should content themselves with friendship and wait for romance and intimacy. Before you are ready for the responsibility of commitment, you content yourself with friendship. Then when you can begin to make kinds of commitment, then you can start to move towards greater intimacy. Pursuing intimacy without commitment is like going mountain climbing with a partner who halfway up the mountain face isn't sure they want to hold the rope anymore. If you've done much rock climbing, you got someone belaying you, you get halfway up, and they're like, hey, it was good knowing you. And you're halfway up, you're like this, you got the next move to make, and you're looking down, and they're not holding the rope anymore. And they're like, well, I didn't make any commitment to you. We're climbing together. Climbing together. Yes, you did make a commitment to me. No, did I promise you anything? Right? That's how this stuff goes. And climbing, it shouldn't be done. I get that. Shouldn't be done in relationships either. But there is no actual commitment unto marriage until it's unto marriage. So you got to be careful with that. All right. Understanding the difference between friendship and intimacy can help us stay within the bounds of friendship until we're ready for the responsibility of an intimate relationship. All right. How might this work? Because you're saying, all right, maybe I'm 16, 17, 18, and I'm thinking about, I'd like to move it from this to this. How do we begin to move a little bit towards intimacy? Let me give you some thoughts. The biblical principles that I mentioned will remain the same. The exactly wins and hows on this, you got to work this out. All right, you've probably heard this term, I kind of coined the term, we'll see how it goes, that I call a focused friendship. Don't make fun of my term, it's the best that I have. You got to give it some kind of something. It's not just a friendship, right? And now it starts to be a little bit of a focused one where we want to begin to talk about getting to know each other better. It's not marriage. See, this is the thing. It's not courtship. It's not like, okay, are you going to marry me? No, I'm only 16 or 17. Well, 17 or 18. Even if you're 19 or 20 and you don't know them very well, it's not like, boom, courting. Go asking her dad if you can have her hand in marriage. And you're like, you don't even know her. First thing I'm going to ask you is, does she like you? Right? Do you even know that? Well, I don't know, but I want to pursue a relationship. If she doesn't like you, you're not going anywhere. So you probably should need to have figured that out. So a focused friendship might help you with that, which if you've been spending a lot of time in youth group or wherever, you've been talking a lot, you've been watching character, and you're thinking, you know, you reach in your, you know, maybe you're a senior in high school, and you're like, man, I've gained some maturity, and I'd love to maybe consider, you talk to your parents about it, I'd like to maybe consider getting to know this person a little better. And so you would make a bit of a commitment. And generally, you would bring the parents into that at that point, or you would talk to her. It's hard to know exactly how this works, but say, you know, I'd like to maybe begin considering what it would be like to get to know each other a little bit on a little bit more one-on-one basis, or I begin to focus a little bit on you. Not saying we're jumping into what the world might call a dating relationship, where all of a sudden, boom, we're now texting each other all the time. We're now going over to each other's house all the time. It's just the beginning. Starting to talk a little bit, spending a little bit more time, maybe after youth group or in more public places. And again, you've talked about this with your parents, and they say, okay, to begin to pursue that seems okay. You begin to do some of that, and you begin to see so you're spending time alone in public together, you are moving past just where it was the group conversations. It might even begin where you are talking with the parents, and they do maybe come over to your house, or you spend some time together as families, or something like that. Where you begin to say that the commitment around it is just simply not, I'm committed to you for life because you don't know that yet. I'm committed to you for marriage. You don't know that yet. It's just, I'd like to commit for a period of time that you and I would begin to focus more on one another. And the commitment given there is I'm only going to do that with you. Now I'm going to have a focused friendship with 8 other people. And when I'm done with that, now here's the dicey part. When I'm done with that, then I wasn't making a commitment unto marriage. I wasn't making a commitment unto courting. I wasn't telling your parents that I wanted to pursue you for marriage. We were just beginning to see, is this something that we'd like to pursue a little bit more? And there isn't, in that sense, the commitment is, it's you and I why we do this, but there's no commitment in it to long term. And we are going to be together for a long time. A couple of weeks, 2 months, something down the road, you go, you know, I enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better, but I don't think I want to pursue this anymore. As that happens, you will have given yourself in a bit of a kind of intimacy, right? You have started to talk more. You've started to consider things together. You've started to move that friendship closer towards looking at each other. And so that's going to be hard to come apart even there. And so you can't always just guard your heart, protect your heart. You never said anything more than you would say at youth group to somebody. No, you've started to talk about some more stuff. And so it's going to be hard if that doesn't work out. But what you need to understand is that's not guaranteed to work out, and nobody owes you working that out. If they said, let's begin to pursue this a little bit, it was done, and you agreed, it was done under friendship. It was the beginnings of some intimacy relationally, but there was not a promise made of anything ongoing. I think you have to have some kind of level of that. It's a little more commitment. And again, I don't care how you work this out. It doesn't have to be called a focused friendship. It doesn't matter. But you're going to have a little bit more commitment, a little bit more structure. But it isn't like, well, I'm going to marry you, or I've made some kind of commitment to you for a longer period of time. It's just as we're beginning this. And man, if it doesn't work out, it's almost, again, rarely is it both of you get together one day and you're like, we no longer want to have a focused friendship. No, at youth group someday, or you know, after youth group probably, someone says, you know, we were pursuing that, and it just doesn't seem like that's what I want to do anymore. And try not to be real spiritual about it when you do that. The Lord is directing me to another woman. Yeah. No, it's pretty much. You could be spiritual. This is not the relationship that I think it would be best to pursue. That we would continue pursuing it in this way. And if you've done it carefully, there will be a level of hurt, absolutely, on the part of the person, particularly who wanted to continue the relationship, because that's part of relationship. You have started to extend it some love, a little bit more special kind of love there, and it wasn't returned the way that you wanted it to return. It's painful, but it's not ungodly. And it's not sinful, unless you expect that the very first time you say, hey, let's pursue things a little bit more, that has to end in marriage, which some of these kind of marriage things do, and that's not good, because then there's this pressure on it, and the one person goes, no, you know, it was in high school, and now they're starting to feel like, I don't want to do this, but the pressure was, you asked the dad, and he said you're going to do this, and the family loves you and gives you dinners, and you feel like you're locked in. I'm trying to help you avoid that. Parents, kind of work this way, work your way through this. Allow, I think, at some level, and this, again, might be in college, you might decide this is when you want to do this. That's generally my commitment. We'll see how that goes. But again, you can, where it starts is up to your parents and you, not you. It's up to your parents, and then they'll communicate with you as you talk with them. As you do this, you're devoted to the word and prayer. That is, you both are seeking to walk with the Lord, and you are seeking to center your relationship around a love for Jesus, even then, even there. And you're centered around doing things together and doing ministry in the church and doing those kinds of things, because those are the things that cement you together. You're seeking your parents' advice and accountability at every place. Seeking your parents' advice and accountability at every step along the way. Could I pursue a relationship like this? No. Okay. Right? Could I begin to maybe talk with so-and-so a little bit more, and would that be okay if I did that? Yes. But let's talk about it. You got to keep talking with me. And your openness to them becomes the ongoing ability to have that relationship. You start cutting them out, shutting it down, getting angry when they talk with you about it, and pretty much my advice to your parents is shut it down now, because that's not going to get better. If they're starting to cut you off, this is my relationship. No, it never was. Okay, so as you start to work in that friendship, you're staying accountable, you're pursuing ministry experiences within a group, that would be C. You are initiating significant conversations in a group, but extending out past that, talking about things that matter and are important, and beginning to share your hearts a bit about certain things, certainly about your walk with the Lord and how you think about the world and those sorts of things. You're trying to maintain proper biblical roles here. That is, the girls aren't constantly pursuing, constantly texting, text, that you're allowing and helping the young men to initiate here and to lead a little bit in this kind of relationship. Guys aren't showing off and trying to act cool and be impressive. You're learning a bit about what it's like to interact as men and women. As you do that, as male and female, as you do those things together. Guys, and you're just kind of feeling your way through to develop a deeper friendship, and yet you have not made a commitment, hey, we're pursuing marriage, or you haven't done that yet. Now, again, the view is still on that this is a relationship that is not the same as a friendship, and that if it's going to go any further past a relatively short amount of time, that it's going to have to start thinking about marriage. That it's going to have to start, which is why you can't do this too early. Because you can't just be in limbo about, you know, this relationship on and on. I'm just hanging out. I'm just liking being friends with you. I'm liking being intimate with you. And just not moving in a direction. There's always a progression in which it moves. And so again, you're talking with your parents about that. As when does it need to be done? When would I begin to start making some greater commitment so I don't just live in this limbo of developing intimacy without any additional commitment, which is what you would need. Remember a few helpful principles for this kind of relationship. Again, the friends are friends forever principle. That's a song by Michael W. Smith that none of you know. You might have heard it. But I would put it this way. If you are doing this kind of focused friendship properly, the goal is that you could move out of it, not without your heart being hurt, it will be hurt, but without being angry at each other. You betrayed me. You promised me this. We did not promise that. That isn't what we were saying. I didn't say this was going to end in marriage. We didn't do that. So you should be able to move out of this as friends. Yes, back to just friends from the focused friendship. Those things that you hate to hear when you're in a relationship. Can we be just friends again? I would say that ends up being the final end result of a lot of these when they start. They start, doesn't really go anywhere. You're like, hey, can we go back to being just friends? Whoa, you don't love me? Not in that way. And it's been shown. It's been made evident. That's hard to hear again, but that's where you're trying to keep it. You're avoiding the I've got you, babe principle. That is that it's just you and me. You're mine. And again, when you've made this commitment to one another, you're not doing focused friendships with everybody else. But it's not like I own you. And why are you talking to anybody else? And why do you have anybody other friends? No, it is, we are trying to work through this, drawing closer, but I have no ownership of you. See, that's what begins to happen. And the idea is then you're going to head anybody else off at the pass. You're going to make sure that no one can horn in on your relationship. And you're going to start, you know, kind of setting it up like I'm the one that owns this girl, or she's the one, I've got this guy. Because that's just not a pretty look. You want to know what most of the drama in youth groups about? It's that. I've got you, and I'm trying to get mine. I'm not going to let you get in on my action here. And if I see you getting close, because that's just not pretty. And that's in this stage. It's not what's going on. They're not yours. Nobody's yours. You don't own anybody. You put the ring on. In that sense, they're yours. Until then, I would say engagement is a place. That's the first ring. Then you got the second one. And tell them that you don't own them. And in this stage, not even close. So you're being, I've got you. You're mine. No. You got the big brother principle. That is just keep your parents involved. Be accountable here. They are your big brother, as it were. They're watching. Dating isn't marriage. These kinds of relationships don't have privileges. Well, Mom, I deserve to have more time with that person. Why? What causes you to deserve that? Nothing. You have more, again, you're progressing towards marriage? You made some kind of commitment there? Well, then, okay, we can talk about more time. I get that. I definitely get that. We're going to try to figure out how to be married. Okay, a little more time. Or we're really serious and we're about, okay, but not when you're just a focused friend, you're hanging out, got to have more time, got to have more texting. Mm-mm. In fact, they should be limiting all those so that you aren't inappropriately pursuing that. The PDA principle, I call it. That is, you're not at this point, I think, even thinking about any kind of public displays of affection. That's not where you're at in this kind of relationship. While you're progressing physically, I mean, you've not made any kind of commitment, nothing is step forward at all. So entering into some kind of physical activity at this point is only going to lead to foolishness. And so I would say you're limiting that at every level when it's just this basic friendship. Yeah, I guess I ended this with, I call it the reverse AT&T principle, and you wouldn't understand much of that either. AT&T, they used to have a jingle that was reach out and touch someone. The reverse principle is don't reach out and touch anybody. Okay, you can just take that for what it means. I will occasionally, it just always, and this will be more, we'll talk more about even when we talk about purity. We were just sitting on the couch like dating couples do. How do dating couples sit on a couch? I know how married people can sit on a couch. And they could wrap their arms around each other and sit in each other's laps, and you'd be, oh, that's gross. But because they're one another's bodies are one another's, and they've made a commitment forever to that one person. So just be really careful with that. I'm not really sure what it is. We're just acting like a dating couple. How does a dating couple act? You're not married. You don't, and particularly these loves, no commitment. So you can touch and grab I don't think you have any right to do that. I think biblically speaking, you're on really shaky ground. We just do that. Why do you just do that? Again, we'll talk more about that in purity. All right, so if you're going to move past a focused friendship then, you're thinking, okay, that's pretty basic level. Yeah, it is. But that's a way to start developing something that's closer because, as I said, you have to be able to go from we're just walking forward face to face, you know, we're loving youth group stuff. It's got to be some way to start talking to each other without it being, hey, we're going to get married. And so wherever parents are working through on that, but then maybe you decide, you begin to do that, and you're spending 5 or 6 months doing that, and you really are enjoying each other, and you're seeing each other's character, and you're getting ready to graduate from high school, or maybe you're in your second year of college, and you're thinking, you know, I would like to pursue this a little bit more. And so you're going to begin to pursue what the world might call, it's not a worldly dating relationship, but whatever you want to call it, I would call it intimacy with integrity, or begin to develop some more intimacy, but you're doing so with the integrity of greater commitment, and now you're starting to wrap the parents around it even more specifically. Here's the place where you would probably ask a dad. Now, again, you should have already been communicating with the parents during this, but you might begin to say, you know, we've spent, thank you for allowing us this closer friendship. It's been sweet. It's been really fun. Thank you. And we really do. We've talked about it a bit, but I don't want to talk anymore. I don't want to make any more promise or anything until I talk with you first. Again, this is if you've got believing parents and usually it's for people in the home. I mean, if you live 1,000 miles apart and you're 25, but even then you can talk to the parents. But anyway, so you're saying, we'd like to begin to think about making this more serious. That we'd begin to think about that pursuing marriage could be our goal. I wouldn't even say it then. You're saying, I'm ready to pursue marriage. But it could be our goal. May I do that? May we do that? And I don't think the young man would be asking that. And then the father at that point says either yes or no. And at that point, he might think it's too early. No. But you let us do it. Yes. And you can keep it at that level for a little while longer, or for a while longer. But I'm not ready. Do you realize that's the dad's prerogative? And he doesn't have to just say, "Yep, you can do whatever." No, it's not time. So he might say, "Wait." He might say, "Okay. I feel like you've demonstrated, integrity. I feel like you've demonstrated maturity, so we'll do that." And so he says, now you can begin, and can you keep accountability here? Now you can begin to pursue this relationship where you are beginning to think about, all right, the next question we're going to ask here or answer here is, do we want to pursue marriage together? So I would say that's not a hugely long amount of time necessarily, but that's a big deal. So you're talking together more. That's, you know, where you begin to spend more extended time, not alone together, but alone in public, I call it. That is alone in your house with your parents right there, alone at a restaurant with everybody watching you, alone in the car with your siblings who are sitting in the back, whatever it might be, that's hard to talk there. Places where you can talk together. Places where you can develop in a deeper kind of relational intimacy, you're going to need that. And your parents are going to oversee that. But that's because it's wrapped around, we're thinking about the next step would be, we would want to be thinking about marriage, or really saying we want to pursue marriage. That's a big deal. And you don't make that decision on, you know, 5 minutes worth of discussion. So you're going to need some time. You're going to need to do that. That's where you might be. You end up, you're a little bit more time where you're calling each other, and we don't call anymore texting, but you're also keeping that very carefully monitored. So intimacy with integrity. And as you do this, you are remaining content. That is, if you're desperate to have this relationship, then it's going to progress in a bad direction. So you're remaining content in what the Lord has given, and you're not even here pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I want more, I want more, I want more. It's a bad sign for your own soul. So you're trying to be really careful. Philippians 4 says, be anxious for nothing, but on everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. You're continuing to build your character, and you're analyzing your character a little bit. And by the way, in this stage, young man or young woman, you're analyzing the character of this person that you're thinking about saying, I want to begin something that is going to be prayerful and in marriage. This is your chance to look and see, what does that look like? And it's a chance where you can still step back. You've not made a commitment onto pursuing marriage yet. So you're building your own character, you're looking at their character. There is a greater commitment here. You are wrapping this around a little bit, which is we are focusing on each other here. We've got our parents' blessing to do this, and we are more seriously now considering how this might move towards marriage. And so there is a greater commitment. There's what I call the confirmation principle, that here you are getting your parents' confirmation as they watch and see this relationship, and they see if you're conducting yourself wisely, and they see if that person is conducting themselves wisely as well. Parent confirmation, church confirmation. You're asking, you know, talking to the leaders in your church and asking them about how they view the relationship and how they view your own character and things like that. You might be asking your friends, be careful, because sometimes your friends can give you bad counsel, but if you got good friends, they might give you good counsel. It says, yeah, seems like you're handling yourself well. You're keeping us still involved because you still got friends there. You haven't just totally turned us off and are still able to maintain good friendship. And then a personal confirmation, where you're growing in your desire to pursue that friendship. You're not, you know, just, you don't just find yourself locked into the relationship because you said that you would, and you, it's might some of the perks of it that you really like, but you're starting to move away emotionally. Now, some of you might, you've got to press through that. You might work hard. Okay, why? Just because I'm lazy, and I don't know if I want to give that much of something to someone. So you might have to press through that a little bit, but you want some personal confirmation here as well, that the relationship is drawing you to the Lord and drawing you to each other. Then you want a companionship principle. That is that you are learning to be, to develop a friendship together. This is a more close facing friendship. And here's where I would tell you, and I'll tell you again, and I'll tell you next week when we talk purity, because I did almost make it actually through this, is that if you start getting physical here, you short circuit your relationship immediately. Because it starts to default to physical stuff immediately. And that's what you begin to do together. And you look forward to the relationship for that instead of looking forward to the relationship for the ongoing friendship that you're building. Be so, so careful. Because then once it defaults to that, that just tends to start to overtake the relationship and you kind of stagnate in your personal walk together. You got to be really careful with that. Guys, physical intimacy, growing together in physical relationship is going to be necessary in a marriage relationship. It's wonderful, special, fantastic, and incredible. But it's not to be pursued outside the bounds of marriage in any significant way. There's just no biblical mandate for that at all. So you're still drawing close in a friendship way, but deeper spiritual and emotional intimacy. Be careful. Spiritual and emotional intimacy is strong. And as I said, in a man and woman, female relationship, it wants to move towards physical. It's supposed to, little secret. And that's great. You just have to carefully bound it so it doesn't happen before it's time. Right? Be so careful of that because it's all supposed to work together and I think it's wonderful and I'm not trying to keep you from something that would be wonderful. I'm trying to keep you from harming some other woman or some other man that you're not going to marry. and you end up doing things with them or to them that you would should never have done, because there's no guarantee of marriage yet at this point. I'm trying to keep you from that, from the emotional scars that happen there, even from the physical scars that can happen. And if you don't think it can happen, just talk to any adult, and they will tell you about how often this kind of thing happens. I'm trying to help you with that. Cultivation principle, complementarian principle, big word. Just again, trying to learn your male-female roles here. And walking through some of those. You're not married yet, so there's still not the fullness of that. Just you're learning some of that. There's a communication principle that you're learning here. No unwholesome word proceeding from your mouth. Because if you're fighting all the time and you can't undo that, that's probably not the right relationship. You should be able to overcome that. You're both sinners. But guys, if you just all fight all the time, you're probably saying, no, we're done. See, you know what happens? You get involved physically. You really like that. The relationship starts to sour. It becomes fighting 24/7. I can almost always guarantee you that if a relationship where it's nonstop fighting and they're still together, there's something else going on. Almost always I can guarantee you. And that's what's binding the relationship together, because they hate each other. They're constantly screaming at each other, but they've had this physical interaction that they really like, and it's hard to break that apart. Communication is key, that you're constantly learning and deepening and growing. And then there's the chastity principle. 1 Corinthians 6:18, that you are fleeing immorality. We'll talk about starting over when we talk about purity. Last thing, and this can be really difficult. How might you enter into a, just for another second, I gotta go to small groups. How might you enter into this focused friendship or this intimacy with integrity if you're a young woman and you know you're not supposed to be pursuing necessarily, you're not supposed to be the one texting and calling and you're waiting on some guy that can't get a clue to maybe want to do that? What do you do? Just a couple of thoughts. I think it's both appropriate and right, this is opinion here to some degree because the Bible doesn't direct it, to put yourself in a position where you are with or close to, as in proximity and in church, where you are closer to a young man that you might be interested in, and that he goes places and all of a sudden you're there, and you're doing something at an activity and all of a sudden you're there, and you're saying, look, I'm here, in the right kind of way, I'm interested. Now, again, he might ignore that totally, and if he does completely, then he's not interested. Right? It might take a little while to do it, but I don't think it's, because I think sometimes you'd be like, well, I'm just going to sit here, the girls, I wasn't supposed to do anything, I'll sit here in my chair, I'll show no interest, I'll be the ice queen, and I want somebody to be interested in me. Again, be careful with that. Again, talk with your parents about that. But where it begins to be an appropriate thing to be in the same proximity, to be around, and for a young man to pay attention to some of those things. And then also for you, young men, not just be going, everywhere, that you begin to think, okay, who, if I want to pursue someone, how do I do that graciously and gently? And not expect, because hear me really carefully, not expect it because you are interested in pursuing a closer friendship, a focused friendship with a young woman, that she is somehow obligated to do that with you. She is not obligated at all. You're interested in her, she's not interested in you. She might be a godly woman who loves the Lord and is fine being friends with you. But she has zero obligation to respond to your desire for a focused friendship if that's the issue. And you shouldn't be mad or angry or bummed out or jealous. You should let her do that. And young ladies, the flip side of showing up places and being somewhere where someone is and kind of saying, I like you. I think that's appropriate. But also it's appropriate that if you don't, to be sure that you make that clear. If someone is trying to pursue a focused friendship with you, you're like, well, maybe sometime. If it's not then, it's no time right then. You don't help a young man by, well, maybe, and maybe a little later, and not sure right now. No, gently and kindly. But no, I don't have any desire. I enjoy our friendship in youth group, and I don't want to hurt you in any way. But I will help you by saying, I'm not interested in that. And you will be much better off doing that than not saying anything or feeling embarrassed or texting 10 friends, tell him I don't like him. Would you please not do that? That hurts that young man so bad. Don't do that. You do that. You be brave enough to say, that's not where I want to pursue. But don't be wicked. Or, it's like, you're so far beneath me that I wouldn't ever touch you with a 10-foot pole. Guys, I'm sorry, but that happens, and it's not pretty. Kind and gracious all the time. All right, well, probably said less than I needed to and more than I should have. So we'll finish here. But guys, remember, some of that's opinion, some of that is things I've seen over years and years and years that I think might be helpful. All the biblical principles apply, and we'll talk very specifically, as in not inappropriate specifically, about maintaining purity and the way that that's done and biblical principles for that next week. Let's pray. Father, thank you for our time. Thank you for the chance we've had to work through these really difficult things in many ways. And I pray for these young men and women that they would learn to grow and build their character, that they would one day be ready for the pursuit of a relationship that would honor and please you. In your precious name, amen. All right, I've kept you a little long. Run quickly to your small groups. There's plenty to discuss, even if